the Buddha, this is the Dharma, this is the Sangha. Well, I've talked with a lot of people this weekend, and this kind of seems to be a kind of common theme for most. So I just talk a little bit about this. That's why I brought this little prop with me for a certain point in the talk. If we remember the Buddha's teaching, the first sermon he gave immediately after his great enlightenment, he talked about his discovery of what he called the Four Noble Truths. And the first of the Four Noble Truths is the truth that we suffer and that our life is permeated with this suffering. You can't separate our samsaric existence from the fact of suffering. There are many different ways in which beings suffer. And there are some particularly intense spiritual forms of suffering. And these intensely spiritual forms of suffering are always, I believe, rooted in karma, perceived or unperceived. It goes back into previous lives. Some very, very dark spiritual, emotional states, mental states can manifest out of this karmic past. It can happen with the nicest people, because if it's rooted in previous existences, then there's nothing that you did in this life, or very little you did to create it. Now, of course, we can make big messes in this life, but for the moment, I'm focusing on karmic inheritance from previous lives. So how do we handle this kind of load of spiritual pain and confusion, spiritual darkness? Sometimes it can manifest as a kind of a negative emptiness, a profound sense of failure and worthlessness. How can one train with this? Where can it go other than into more of the same? So I just want to talk a little bit about this. Here's the first thing, and this is described very nicely in the first of the three pure precepts, which is traditionally put as cease from evil. One way you can think of that first of the three pure precepts is, first step, stop banging around between the opposites. How do we stop banging around between the opposites? Two things. The first is preceptual. Train oneself to refrain from willfully and deliberately thinking badly of oneself, speaking badly of oneself, and acting in ways that reinforce the sense of worthlessness, reinforce despair. What kinds of actions reinforce despair? Desperate actions reinforce despair. Draw back from desperate action. Draw back from despairing speech. Draw back from despairing thought. This is not to say that the same dark feelings won't be going through, but it means that one trains oneself so as not to build on them and make them worse than they already are. That's one aspect. The other aspect, you know, complements it perfectly, and that is to do this at the deeper levels, one really has to meditate. One has to, if you're banging around between the opposites, where can you go that's not in the opposites? You got to go to the third position. Go back to the place of stillness within your own hara, within your own spiritual center. Go back to the place of stillness and take refuge there. Take refuge in your own heart. That's meditation. I know that meditation is often thought of and talked about and taught at other levels, but when we're talking about this really spiritually such painful stuff, well, those more shallow levels won't work. One has to understand it fully religiously. There is that within one which is a refuge. Take refuge there. Where is that place of refuge? It is a place of stillness. So, you know, we talk about this all the time. Look at the Rules for Meditation by Dogen. When the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. When we're banging around between the opposites, go quickly back into the hara. Go quickly back there. Then what do we do? Well, then we've got to look up and not down. And you have to understand, this is so vitally important, the darkness of the feelings, the depth of the conviction of unworthiness and of failure, that cannot stop you looking up if you choose to look up. You can look down, you can also look up. That's a matter of the will. And one learns to do it by doing it. There's no other way. In the midst of the darkness, one learns to look up by looking up. And that is a further aspect of meditation. One turns in the right direction, faces in the right direction, and the heart cries out in help, you know, for help, then one looks up towards that help. Then in that looking up, one gathers up all that darkness, all that pain, and one presents it to the eternal as a gift. So, here's the thing. The eternal is infinite love, and it is incapable of distinguishing good from evil, right from wrong, victim from perpetrator, fair from unfair, male from female, success from failure. All that stuff means nothing to the eternal. It only loves unconditionally. Therefore, it turns away from nothing. It rejects nothing. It despises nothing. It disdains nothing. It scorns nothing. It only knows how to love. It's very ignorant by human standards. It hasn't got all the sophistication we've got. But it's infinitely wise, because it only sees Buddha. So you can take whatever it is, however dark, however pain, and you can present it to the Eternal on the altar of the heart. That's why I have this little box. Because this is how I think of it when I'm doing it. This is the image that often comes up for me. A little gift box, a little wrapped box, a little gift that is placed upon the altar of the heart and rests there. Placed before the Buddha and rests there in the arms of the Buddha, in the lap of the Buddha, before the Buddha, for the Buddha to help me with. For the Eternal to help me with. The three pure precepts, this is doing only good. But let's just take the me out of it. Who is it that can only do good? You see, by just going with a childlike trust to the Eternal and doing my part to take refuge and to sit still, which is, you know, hard work in the midst of a storm of pain. Hard work. But if I do that work, then all the heavy lifting will be done by the Eternal. That which I cannot do, the Eternal does with infinite ease. And then the Eternal takes this gift, whatever it is. Again, remember, it doesn't matter what it is. The Eternal doesn't care. Infinite love only knows the love, and it will just wash it in its love. And then it will bathe it in its love. And that gives it the chance to begin to see some light. And that's where the negative emptiness begins to turn to the immaculacy of emptiness. If we think about the litany of the Great Compassionate One, near the beginning, it says, all is defilement, defilement, earth, earth. Do the work within my heart. And that's this stage of things. You'll note that this whole process, what is the attitude that one brings this whole process? And this attitude is why bowing is so important, why bowing is the very bedrock of Buddhism. Why it's said that when bowing ceases, Buddhism itself ceases to exist. It's reverence. It's reverence. We're banging around between the opposites when we're hating ourselves, when we are using our will to hate ourselves, or part of ourselves, to hate our past, to hate our potential future, to hate our present circumstances, to hate another, to scorn or look down on in any way whatsoever, then we are banging wildly in the opposites. All of the opposites are generated out of an opinion we have of ourselves, by the way. They all are. The classic way this is put in Buddhism is the root of craving and hatred is ignorance. In the very heart of what ignorance is the illusion of a self separate from that infinite love and goodness. Well, that's not an enlightened self we're talking about. That's that part of ourselves that is dark and pained and confused. That part of ourselves that comes from not getting what the precepts are really about and thrashing around and creating suffering. That is not the enemy. That is the potential for enlightenment. We only have to handle it right. Granted, it's hot stuff. It can be, it'll sometimes seem too hot to handle. And it can be handled right. And we use the precepts, the true spirit of the precepts, in meditation, what meditation really is. The third of the three pure precepts in its oldest form is purify your own heart. But again, one can undriver seat that expression and kind of turn it around in a certain way. And it could be said, bring all of these pained bits to the altar of the heart, to the eternal, and allow all of them, your whole karmic inheritance, bit by bit, piece by piece, bring it all to the eternal through a limitless in time and space, a limitless commitment to following the path of the Buddhas and ancestors. And of course that is really just another way of expressing what the Bodhisattva vows are. So you could say that the third of the three pure precepts is really the Bodhisattva vows, what they really are, at their root. Not a driver CD, I will save others, but making one's body and mind, one's life fully available to the eternal for eternity, if that's what it takes, for the work within the heart to be done and completed, conversion to be complete, and the merit of that then to be allowed to flow out to all beings. And the Eternal takes care of that. We don't have to get driver's seaty about that either. The Eternal takes care of the spreading of the merit. And indeed, from every true conversion, there is a great fountain of merit that bursts out upon the universe. This pure precept is often put, is in our tradition, put as do good for others. But you can see what do good for others here means. Who are the others? First and foremost, they're my own karmic inheritance, and everyone potentially in my karmic stream is going to benefit from my training, from my allowing the Eternal to do the work within my heart. And then secondarily, it's all beings, because the Eternal will spread the merit widely. So, let's go back to the beginning. What amazing things can come from a bunch of crud, a bunch of spiritual pain and darkness. What amazing things can come from a bunch of spiritual pain and darkness. Where does it all come from? The lotus is rooted in the mud. Don't despise that mud. Kazan said, Shakyamuni Buddha turned the stream of compassion within and realized enlightenment. That's what each of us has to do. We turn the stream of compassion within when we cease to despise ourselves, any part of ourselves. And we cease to despise what we would see reflected in the mirror of others back at ourselves, because anything that we despise in another is simply really just the other being used as a mirror to reflect something about ourselves back to us. You note it here. This getting beyond the opposites means you cannot stay in the fair and unfair, victim perpetrator kind of attitudes anymore. You can't. Worldly good and evil, chuck it. You've got to go beyond the opposites. You've got to allow yourself to be taken beyond them. At whatever it costs, it's worth it. And it begins with, all is defilement, do the work within my heart. And lots of bowing. I always recommend to people, sometimes I forget, and I shouldn't forget, but you know, when you can't think of anything else to do, when you can't think of anything else to do, your wit's end, and you're just thoroughly miserable, go find an altar and bow. Just do a whole bunch of bows. Don't count them. Just bow. Just do lots of bows. Don't think about why you're bowing. Just bow. Just bow. And every time you open your hands, you know, it's your offering. Your offering to the eternal. There is no absolute evil that is opposed to the goodness of the eternal. There are only shadows of pain and confusion that sometimes flit across the sun, clouds that flit across the face of the sun and temporarily seem to obscure it. When we look up, we choose to trust that the sun is there and that the shadows are fundamentally unrealities and yet not separate from the sun. They too have the Buddha nature. This is not something that requires one to be heroic or a special kind of person or saintly or anything like that. This is just something that ordinary people can do and can work at every day. And very ordinary people prove it. One thing that some people have noted about some of these really just horrific situations that people create for themselves, like the concentration camps in World War II and places where people just managed to, in their pain and confusion, to turn their world into a hell. And make a hell for others in the process. People have noted that right in the midst of these hellish situations, some people simply are as if they are just lifted above it, above the misery and suffering of it, and simply live utterly selfless lives in the midst of it. And another thing that people have noted is that there's nothing special that characterizes these people. You couldn't predict ahead of time who would do this and who wouldn't. Some of the seemingly most unlikely, unholy people do this transcendence in the midst of it. A Buddhist would say, well, it's just merit manifesting. A person making good choices, helped by past merit. And that's true for our ordinary daily life too, in ordinary situations of suffering. I mean, a person can be in a little Auschwitz within their own heart, right in the midst of plenty, you know. The deepest spiritual suffering happens in any circumstances, and there's no pain like that pain. And that too can be just brought to the eternal place upon the altar of the heart. And we can wait patiently as the eternal brings its help to it. When we are going through a period of reaping karma from the past, when karmic consequences coming due and we're really flooded by the darkness, that is a time to hold fast to the Lord of the house, to hold fast to faith, and to just put one foot in front of the other, one step at a time. Your master wrote in 76, don't worry about the past, don't fear the future, live now without evil. It is always in our power to do that if we choose to do it. No external thing can stop us. No amount of suffering can stop us. It's a matter of the use of the will. This teaching does not offer some like magic wand for removing the suffering. No one can say when a certain karmic debt will be fully repaid. This is why we need so much faith to do this. It takes real faith. The Rim Master always taught that. It takes faith. We all have the capacity for that faith. We all have the light of faith within us, coming directly from Buddha nature. It can't be extinguished. And it's our choice whether we will access it from moment to moment or whether we won't. Sometimes we're a little better at it. Sometimes we're not so good at it. No one's keeping score. When we find that we've slipped up and we're looking down, as soon as you notice you're looking down, well, you can look up. As soon as you notice you're banging around in the opposites again, you've noticed it, you can draw back out of the opposites, back to center. Again and again and again. Takes great patience. It's not accidental that third of the five columns came up for me many years ago as wait patiently. Sometimes it seems it takes infinite patience. Again, we don't just have to rely on our own resources in the sense of the resources of a separate self, which is an illusion anyway. There is that which is called in some of the scriptures the patient endurance of the uncreate, the patient endurance of the eternal. We can find that within our own heart. meditate and take it one moment at a time. Now I grant that some conditions are more conducive, some external conditions are more conducive to doing this and doing it really thoroughly than others. And of course this is why we have contemplative monasteries. So it's, you know, it's very traditional in Buddhism when people are really going through it, people who are lay people and live in the world, they will often, at a certain point, just quietly disappear into a monastery for a while and train with the monks working on it. And of course, this place has always been available for that when people need it. There needs to be a place where you can just kind of disappear from the world for a while. And that's what we've always tried to have this place be. So as to the kind of external conditions of your training, you have to trust your own instincts. Sometimes it's good to go back into the busyness of the world and train with it there. Sometimes it's good to retreat and train with it somewhere else. Trust your instincts. Your heart always knows. Just listen to it. Depends. Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha.